2017, danger is in the air. This is the Divided Kingdom. I'm Elizabeth Cuppett Caverly. My co-host Lou Caverly and I are glad to be with you tonight, December 7th. And, of course, this is the remembrance of Pearl Harbor, the attack of 76 years ago. But are we in incredible danger of another kind of attack, one with far, far more serious consequences? And we want to point out that you can hear us on shortwave WWCR 4.840 megahertz Thursday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can also hear us on the Liberty Works Radio Network, LWRN.net, on Mondays at 5 p.m., repeating at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, and some of our archival programs later in their week. Again, that is LWRN.net, and you might want to use one of their apps for your smartphone. Well, we said that we're very concerned about some danger, and we also would like to tell all of you that we did have a very good Thanksgiving. We had some illness here, but we had some time to regroup and to really get close to the Lord and see that He does want us to continue this important warning work for the remnant. And we point out to you again that we cover a lot of information in 1 hour every week, and we don't have commercials. So if some of you appreciate this, we could use some contributions, any amount from a dollar up. We can take a little cash sent to us, but we can't take checks written to us. That it has to be written to WWCR. We can take money orders. So you can write to Lou, capital L-O-U, Caverly, capital C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, and the town is Bethlehem. Isn't that appropriate at this time of year? Maryland, and the zip is 21609. Now, we really want to move on and get into our information. Lou and I have heard former House Representative Roscoe Bartlett, and he's such a strong constitutionalist, and he was a great patriot, and he was forced out by Maryland's unethical practice of gerrymandering, redistricting in the western part of Maryland. And he was such a great guy that during the Iraq War, he had shipments of apples that came from western Maryland sent to our troops, lots of human kinds of things. Well, he told a radio interviewer a year or two ago that he has set up a home for his family in rural West Virginia to prepare to live should this catastrophe strike the U.S. Lou, let's get right into what it is.
Yes, Elizabeth. WorldNet Daily's recent article highlights this crucial concern for all of us. It's entitled, Obama Holdovers Exposing U.S. to Possible EMP Attack. Washington. There's no question that the United States is vulnerable to an electromagnetic pulse attack that could result in mass starvation and the death of about 90% of the American population, a nuclear strategist warns. But the deep state, those entrenched bureaucrats whose loyalties likely lie with the previous administration, under which they got their jobs, is indifferent. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, a nuclear strategist formerly with the CIA, who served as chief of staff of the Congressional EMP Commission until it was terminated in September, the same month North Korea tested a hydrogen bomb, which he described as capable of a super powerful EMP attack, said liberal Democrats still are running a lot of Washington even after President Trump's election. Quote, the people who sabotaged the EMP commission, Obama holdovers, are still at the Department of Defense. They have not been replaced by the Trump administration. This is happening not just with the very vitally important EMP commission, he said. And again, in quotes, our society, the Trump administration, and the people who voted for Trump are paying for the failure of Congress to support Trump appointees quickly. At the same time, during the Obama administration, he, that would be Obama, had twice as many appointees appointed to positions in government than Trump has. It's not President Trump's fault. These people are undermining and opposing the policies that President Trump has enacted, including the case of the EMP Commission. Obama administration bureaucrats who believed Hillary Clinton would win the 2016 presidential election did everything they could to sabotage and undermine the commission, Fry said. He went on to say, quote, they held back money for a whole year. They held back security clearances. They tried to stop the commission staff from working, arguing that, quote, you need a contract in order to work for the EMP commission, unquote. They wouldn't even let me work or other staff pro bono. We did it anyway. Had Hillary won, we would never have received any of our funding or security clearances. It was all after she clearly lost and Congress intervened that they relented at the last minute. A commission that was supposed to have been able to work 18 months at EMP ended up with resources and support from the Department of Defense that enabled us to put in 6 months of work. That's no way to provide for the national security of the country against an existential threat like EMP, unquote. WND, that's World Net Daily, reported only last month that a Congressional Subcommittee on Homeland Security heard the bad news from experts who have been studying America's vulnerability to an existential threat. A real-life, quote-unquote, doomsday scenario. The threat of a North Korean nuclear attack on the U.S. is almost unimaginably worse than turning a city like Chicago or Denver into ashes, they testified. If just one of the nuclear weapons North Korea is now known to possess could be directed toward the heartland of the U.S. and detonated in the upper atmosphere, it could fry the electrical grid with an electromagnetic pulse, paralyze communications and transportation nationwide, instantly plunge the country back into a 19th-century-style existence, and cause 90% of Americans to starve to death in 1 year. An EMP attack likely would come from the explosion of a nuclear bomb at altitude over the United States. Its shockwaves would disrupt all electronics in line of sight, including systems that deliver food, fuel, energy, and communications to Americans. The result would be a run on food currently in stores and starvation when those supplies failed, as replacements would be impossible without those delivery systems. White House Chief of Staff John Kelly assured on Fox News that Trump appointees will be confirmed eventually over Democratic opposition. Kelly told Fox News host Laura Ingraham, quote, the names have been put forward in most cases. The president was making this case last week when he had lunch with a Republican caucus on the Senate side. If you compare where this administration is relative to the Obama administration, we are way, way behind, maybe half the number of those confirmed. And even under the last Bush administration, we are way behind. The Senate Democratic leadership has been very, very effective in slowing things down to a snail's pace, unquote. Kelly also addressed the possibility of North Korea using a bomb to explode an EMP over the mainland of the United States.
And Lou, I have to interject here that we think this concern is so vital that we would like to just send this program to LWRN.net and no other programs for this week so that it'll be the program they play in the archives as well, because we really have to warn people, and that is our key purpose, I believe, here on the radio, to warn Americans spiritually. We're warning them because of the apostasies coming into the church and the lukewarm Laodicean churches and the ongoing Planned Parenthood phenomenon. We just cannot think that we're continuing on as if Biden never released those videos. It's going to take maybe a century, but we know that God Almighty will not stand for it. Just as though people thought slavery would last forever, God said no. He created each of us, and those little babies have a right to be born. They are human. So at any rate, now we move on, Lou, and back to you.
Time magazine's November 6th issue's cover headline read, The Wrecking Crew, How Trump's Cabinet is Dismantling Government as We Know It. But one Time reader responded thus, quote, "In response to the November 6th cover story about President Trump's cabinet dismantling the federal government, Robert, and I believe that's Colin, of Salinas, California, noted that to do so was to grant, quote, many of the wishes of the winning electorate," unquote. Well, the winning electorate, from what I can see, does not want America to become Europe. Many of us, and you out there listening, are extremely concerned about the radical Islam takedown of Germany, Sweden, overturning Western culture and civilization with a new rape and beheading jihad blitzkrieg. We don't want this influx of death and destruction coming over the ocean to us. It was bad enough to have one grandmother in Oklahoma beheaded. So what's the latest on the situation of President Trump trying to ban immigrants from the six most lawless countries? And we have information we just got on that just a couple of days ago. As we record this, the Supreme Court said that Trump will be permitted to enforce full enforcement of his travel ban. And this is a headline from Fox News, December 4th, 2017. It says, handing the White House a huge judicial victory, the U.S. Supreme Court on Monday ruled in favor of President Trump's travel ban, affecting residents of six majority Muslim countries. The justices said the policy can take full effect despite multiple legal challenges against it that haven't yet made their way through the legal system. The ban applies to people from Syria, Chad, Iran, Libya, Somalia, and Yemen. Lower courts have said people from those countries with a bona fide, and that's in quotes, bona fide relationship with someone in the United States could not be prevented from entry. Grandparents and cousins were among the relatives courts said could not be excluded. Left-wing justices Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sonia Sotomayor said they would have left the lower court orders in place. The justices offered no explanation for their order, but the administration had said that blocking the full ban was causing, quote, irreparable harm, unquote, because the policy is based on legitimate national security and foreign policy concerns. Both courts are scheduled to hear arguments in those cases this week. Both courts are also dealing with the issue on an accelerated basis, and the Supreme Court noted it expects those courts to reach decisions, quote, with appropriate dispatch, unquote. Quick resolution by appellate courts would allow the Supreme Court to hear and decide the issue this term by the end of June. White House Deputy Press Secretary Hogan Gidley called the ban, quote, lawful and essential to protecting our homeland. We are pleased that the Supreme Court has agreed to allow us to fulfill this most vital mission performed by any sovereign nation. DHS will continue to fully implement the President's robust and constitutional counterterrorism agenda in accordance with the law, said the Department of Homeland Security's Acting Press Secretary, Tyler Q. Holton. Trump's travel ban has been challenged in separate lawsuits by Hawaii and the American Civil Liberties Union. Both have argued that the ban discriminates against Muslims and should not go into effect under immigration laws. Quote, President Trump's anti-Muslim prejudice is no secret. He has repeatedly confirmed it, including just last week on Twitter, said Omar Jadwat, director of the ACLU's Immigrants' Rights Project. It's unfortunate, and this is again his quote, it's unfortunate that the full ban can move forward for now. But this order does not address the merits of our claims. We continue to stand for freedom, equality, and for those who are unfairly being separated from their loved ones. We will be arguing Friday in the Fourth Circuit that the ban should ultimately be struck down, unquote. Trump issued his first travel ban within days of being sworn in as president. That version tightened the country's refugee and visa policies and suspended almost all refugee admissions for 4 months. Trump issued a revised version in March after the first was blocked by federal courts. The second one expired in September after a lengthy court fight and was replaced by the current version.
And we can see the contrast of the open borders in Europe. There was a report here from the Daily Wire, and this was October 31st, 2017. It's appropriate that it was on Halloween, because what could be more macabre than this? UK wants to give ISIS housing if they promise not to kill infidels, by Davis. As the Islamic State terror group's caliphate falls, European governments are now grappling with the question of how to deal with the thousands of radicalized Muslims raised on the continent who left their homes to fight in the Middle East but will now be returning to their homelands. Reportedly, the British government is considering a plan that would essentially bribe the terrorists and terrorist suspects returning to the UK from Syria to keep them peaceful. The UK Daily Mail reported. The Daily Mail claims to have viewed documents that show the British government is going to launch Operation Constraint, which would effectively give extremists free housing in exchange for a promise not to engage in terrorist violence in Britain. Up to 20,000 terrorists could be targeted using this program, which is reportedly slated to begin next year. We are planning a number of pilots to explore the best way to diverting such people from terrorism and extremist activity, an anonymous source told the Daily Mail. Why don't they just give them lollipops, read them bedtime stories, and tuck them in at night? That's about as efficient as this insane proposal. Has the British government completely lost its mind? I can't believe I have to say this, but common sense should dictate that you can't bribe people into not committing mass murder. I mean, seriously, how on earth does the British government think this is a good idea? Plus, people who are okay with blowing themselves up probably don't care too much about housing. Britain is no stranger to terrorist violence. Until the 1998 Good Friday Agreement, it was engaged in a long-running guerrilla war against Northern Irish separatists, who regularly staged car bomb and other attacks in both Northern Ireland and in England. The governments that fought the Irish Republican Army would never have dreamed of offering the IRA free housing in exchange for peace. Now, in an era of radical Islamic terrorism in Europe and attacks in the UK, Britain has already seen what just a handful of terrorists can do. British citizens, quote, infidels, to the terrorists, have died, and entire cities have been locked down for hours on end because of a handful of attacks. Rather than try to coddle these evil individuals, the government should just throw them in jail for a couple decades. That's where they belong. Sadly, this sort of strategy just shows how paralyzed some governments are by political correctness. These people don't seem to be able to accept the fact that you can't mollify the enemy. Not everything in this world can be fixed with free stuff. Sorry, Bernie. There are people who are going to try to kill the innocent no matter what, and there is a very limited range of options when dealing with them. Thankfully, the United States now has a government that knows that the best way to deal with terrorists is to lock them up or find them on the battlefield and send them to meet their 72 virgins. Let's hope our friends across the pond wake up before they start giving terrorists money. If not, the consequences could be deadly. So we need some valuable background about what we reported on a prior program. We reported about Ed Klein's new book, and we have a little bit more here from News with Views about this. A new book by a former editor-in-chief of the New York Times Magazine and best-selling author reveals for the first time an FBI field report about the collusion between American anti-Trump radicals and foreign ISIS Al-Qaeda operatives. In his latest book, All Out War, The Plot to Destroy Trump, Edward Klein reveals to the public findings from an FBI investigation into the shocking ties between far-left radicals in America and Islamist extremists. The FBI report was delivered to Acting Director Andrew McCabe on July 11, 2017. While certain names have been redacted, Klein reveals how the FBI followed a group of Americans These were anarchist radicals who traveled to Germany to join their German counterpart, Anti-Fascistische Action, I hope I pronounced that right, to protest Trump's attendance at a meeting of G20 leaders and central bank governors. Evidence gathered from a variety of intelligence sources showed the Americans took part in the violence there. Quote, there is also evidence of meetings between these individuals and associates of ISIS, making some sort of common cause with Americans who are determined to commit violence against the U.S. makes them potentially very useful to radical Islam, writes Klein based on the report. Klein notes that the FBI paid particular attention to a group of anarchists from Oakland, sister city to Berkeley, California, site of the campus of University of California at Berkeley, and the scene of several violent protests. And now, as I said before, we're going to get some valuable background information to understand how these Antifa leftists and other leftists, now George Soros connected, how this group got its inception much earlier, during the time when Barack Obama's mother and Frank Marshall Davis were embracing each other and Marxism. This article was written by Tom DeWeese in the DeWeese Report, January 2009.
Barack Obama and the Weatherman. Since just before the election of Barack Obama in November, and again, this is written in 2009, it has been interesting and quite shocking that a 40-year-old, seemingly forgotten radical group called Weatherman is getting so much attention. Of course, Obama denies any connection to old Weatherman. Here's a quick history of the Weatherman and why it's relevant to a new president calling for an undefined, quote, change, unquote. You've heard the names, the famous names, Bill Ayers, Mark Rudd, Bernardine Dorn, and Jeff Jones, among others. Today, Ayers describes himself as a professor. Dorn is his wife and a clinical law professor. Jeff Jones, predictably, is an environmentalist and political consultant, and Mark Rudd is now a teacher. Just normal Americans living their lives. Really? In 1962, Students for a Democratic Society, SDS, was born. It was a radical organization of college students. SDS quickly became the opposition to the Vietnam War. They organized demonstrations on college campuses across the nation to mobilize students to take, quote, direct action, unquote, against, quote, racism, poverty, and war, unquote. In 1963, SDS got involved in community organizing, teaming up with the Black Panthers, the Hispanic Young Lords, and other radical organizations. By 1966, SDS was moving in a revolutionary Marxist direction. Their demonstrations and marches became violent clashes with police, many turning into riots. About the same time, SDS was joined by the Progressive Labor Party, PL, a self-styled Marxist-Leninist Maoist party dedicated to implementing communist ideology. By 1969, a majority of SDS found the PL's strict Marxist ideology too restraining, hurting organizing and recruiting efforts. At the same time, SDS leaders were looking for a more long-term agenda to bring about a communist revolution in the United States. Simply fighting the war was too limiting. In June 1969, SDS held a raucous convention in which the PL was tossed out of SDS, and a new faction took control. That faction was called Weatherman. It issued a long, rambling manifesto detailing the future direction of the movement. The document was entitled, You Don't Need the Weatherman to Know Which Way the Wind Blows. The title was taken from a Bob Dylan song. The manifesto detailed Weatherman ideology and the means to create a Marxist revolution in America. They always spelled that with a K, America, A-M-E-R-I-K-A. Some of its chapter titles include the struggle for socialist self-determination. Black liberation means revolution. Anti-imperialist revolution and the United Front. The revolutionary youth movement, class analysis. And repression and revolution. The document called for a class war against America's free market society. It talked of joining up with Marxist revolutions around the world, in China, in Cuba, and more. It called for the creation of a, quote-unquote, revolutionary party. Above all, it called for war against what Weatherman called America, again spelled with a K. Why is that significant today? Because the authors of the document were the leaders of Weatherman: Mark Rutte, Bill Ayers, Bernardine Dorn, Jeff Jones, and others. Weatherman's first public act was what it called Days of Rage. It called on students to leave their classrooms and engage in 3 days of violence and street demonstrations. They smashed windows of businesses and cars and attacked police lines. Mark Rutte himself was arrested in Chicago while leading the violence. The result of the 3 days of violence was 287 people arrested, 800 automobiles, and 600 windows were smashed. The combined bail was over $2 million. In spite of the damage, Weatherman was disappointed with the turnout of demonstrators. They had hoped to bring thousands to the streets, rather than the 300 to 500 who turned out. Mark Rutte and the other Weathermen concluded that white people weren't ready to engage in revolution, as did their, quote, black brothers, unquote, and the Black Panthers. To win, decided the Weathermen, whites had to share some of the cost of revolution by, quote, picking up the gun, unquote. To not do so was racist, they believed. That decision led Weatherman leaders, Ayers, Dorn, Rudd, and Jones to make the decision to declare war on imperialist America by going underground to foster direct violence against the states.
They then became known as the Weather Underground. During their reign of terror, the Weather Underground bombed corporate headquarters, burned ROTC buildings and college campuses, and even planted a bomb in the U.S. Capitol building. They used anti-personnel bombs filled with nails, staples, and other shrapnel designed to hurt and kill people. Several of those bombs were planted in police stations, resulting in the murder of Police Sergeant Brian McDonnell in San Francisco. Another officer was permanently maimed, and two others were injured in that attack. A police informant, Larry Grathwall, who, working inside the Weather Underground, reported that Bill Ayers planned the bombing and Bernardine Dorn planted it. There were more such bombings in other cities. Later, Mark Rudd was the sole survivor of a bomb explosion that went off as he was building it in a Weather Underground safe house in New York. That bomb and more were to be placed in a dance hall at the Fort Dix Army Base. They would have killed hundreds of soldiers and their dates. As they engaged in a revolution, the Underground would from time to time issue communiques, much like Osama bin Laden in a later era, to send messages to followers. In communique number one, from the Weather Underground, it reads in part, "Hello, this is Bernardine Dorn. I'm going to read a declaration of a state of war. Emphasis hers. In the document," she warned, "within the next 14 days, we will attack a symbol or institution of American injustice." It was issued on May 21, 1970. On June 9, 1970 came communique number two from the Weather Underground. It reported, "Tonight at 7 p.m., we blew up the New York City police headquarters. The pigs in this country are our enemies. The time is now. Political power grows out of a gun, a Molotov, a riot, a commune, and from the soul of the people." There's much more to the history of violence and revolution pulled off or attempted by Ayers, Rudd, Dorn, and Jones, and others in their clan. But these examples should give anyone enough of an idea as to their dedication to destroying America. But what does that have to do with today? And how does it connect to Barack Obama? The bad boys and girls of the 60s liked to portray themselves as just some college kids. They got a little carried away. "It's in the past," says the news media. "It has nothing to do with today or Barack Obama," say his supporters. It is vital that Americans understand that these were dedicated revolutionaries determined to destroy America by violence if necessary. They used every means possible to recruit America's youth into their revolt. They marched in the street, chanted pro-Mao slogans, started riots, disrupted schools, burned college buildings, and eventually bombed symbols of the American establishment they hated, resulting in the deaths and maiming of police officers sworn to protect it. And I have to interject here. What does this sound like? Doesn't this sound like Antifa? An update? Back to the article. These were not just overactive college kids. The agenda they followed sought to destroy every aspect of American life. They hated private property and wanted it all redistributed with no ownership, like the communes they chose to live on. They hated free enterprise and wanted all business run by the workers, no bosses, no owners. The only private business they would tolerate were those businesses that should be they would tolerate were those run by individuals that hired no one. They knew to achieve these things, they had to start by changing the history taught to a young generation in the schools. They hated religion and wanted to run it out of the country. They hated the family unit, saying it subjugated women who should be liberated. They sought to build divides between the rich and the poor, creating a class struggle in America that didn't really exist before. And they didn't hesitate to use violence to achieve their goals.
When the violence failed, the Weathermen Corps and their followers didn't give up or fade away. They remained underground in a new way. They melted into society. They took teaching positions in college to reach the younger generation. They took jobs in the media to take control of the message. They worked their way up in the hated corporations to gain control of policy. And they surged into government at all levels, boring into the core of America to expose, I should say, to impose their agenda at every chance, from the federal government to state legislatures to city councils. Today, for example, we have Congressman Bobby Seale, one of the infamous Chicago Eight, State Senator Tom Hayden, the founder of the SDS, and another of the Chicago Eight. It's interesting to note that a great number of the members of the revolution went into the environmental movement. Unable to get Americans to outright accept Marxist ideology in their revolution, instead they wrapped it all in a nice green blanket of environmental protection. Ever since, under the banner of environmental protection, Americans have happily tossed their liberties on the bonfire like a good old-fashioned book burning. They accepted the premise that private property and business must be controlled or destroyed, simply for the good of the environment. It's not just a happy coincidence. In this way, the revolution of the 60s is now progressing at a rapid pace. And what of Ayers, Dorn, Rudd, and Jones? Ayers took the route into education as a professor, but that certainly hasn't replaced his activism for the cause of communism. Recently, he traveled to the new red Mecca, Venezuela, a nation quickly falling behind a new red curtain of tyranny under Hugo Chavez.
And may I interject there? We'll update Tom DeWeese's article by saying now a lot of the former teachers and people who were middle-class women, they're earning their living as prostitutes by going into Guatemala. It has become such a fallen country. So we can see what the fruits of communism are and Marxism. Go ahead, Lou.
Ayers is influential enough with a new American-hating dictator to meet with him and appear on the same platform. There, Ayers proclaimed his support for, quote, the profound educational reforms underway here in Venezuela under the leadership of President Chavez. We share this belief that education is the motor force of revolution. I look forward to seeing how you continue to overcome the failings of capitalist education as you seek to create something truly new and deeply humane, unquote. Does it sound like Ayers has changed a single stripe from his college activist days? Mark Rudd, also in education. He feels at home there. After all, he is the man who shut down Columbia University with a student strike in the 60s. And he is still active in the cause. Recently, he turned up making comments on a radical blog called Rag Blog, where he attempted to calm nervous quote-unquote progressives, a new euphemism coined a few years back to provide cover for those who don't want to be called communists. The quote, progressives were growing nervous for the cabinet appointments Obama has been making. These people are so radical that they actually consider Hillary Clinton to be from the right. Of course, keeping a bunch of old Clintonistas, not to mention a Bush holder like Secretary of State Gates, make that Secretary of Defense Gates, has caused great concern for those who thought Obama was the answer to the revolution. Said Rudd, the Obama appointments are part of a deliberate strategy to, quote, feign to the right, quote, unquote, and move to the left. He said, quote, any other strategy invites sure defeat, unquote. Rudd, to be sure, wants Obama to be victorious in his goals. Now, why would that be? Rudd is a dedicated communist, yesterday, today, and tomorrow, seeking to destroy the American way of life.
And we now recall that William F. Jasper of the New American Magazine exposed that actually Antifa is more or less a front for the American Revolutionary Communist Party. If you check it out, you'll find a lot of information on that. So things are not as they seem, and we also tell all of you listeners that you can't afford to become complacent. You can be concerned about the EMP, and you can think about what you can do for your family with food and with other items to survive. And we also tell you that you cannot be complacent to think that everything is going to be hunky-dory. How about it, Lou?
That's right. And going on, Jones is now a political consultant and a dedicated environmentalist. One of his clients is the Natural Resources Defense Council, a radical environmental group made up of some of the most radical and most vicious lawyers ever assembled. Some on Capitol Hill have called them a street gang. They are revolutionaries in suits. They intimidate companies with their lawsuits and delight in suing the government to get their way. Their lawsuits help stop the drilling of American oil and American logging. And more. And when they win, they fill their coffers with taxpayer money as reimbursement for their legal costs. It's the proper place for a former underground terrorist. Dawn is Ayer's wife. They went underground together in the old days of the revolution. Today, she continues to spread her brand of revolution by reaching into the community of families as a clinical law professor and director of the Children and Family Justice Center at Northwestern University. She forces children's rights today to create tomorrow's revolutionaries. Still, what is the Obama connection to these dedicated revolutionaries? It's perhaps ironic that all four former weathermen terrorists today work through an organization called Movement for a Democratic Society. That organization is the parent to another one called Progressives for Obama. They raised funds for Obama. They promoted his candidacy. And they helped to recruit activists to support him. In the past 40 years, Ayers, Dorn, Rudd, and Jones have not been heard from in the mainstream media. They have not been an issue in a presidential election. They have not openly promoted or supported a candidate, snubbing even John Kerry and Bill and Hillary Clinton as not being revolutionary enough for their agenda for the destruction of America. Until now. Until Barack Obama. These four are dedicated Marxist revolutionaries. Why now? Why Obama? You don't need a weatherman to know why.
No, and we do think that there was much in that article that tells us the truth that if you don't know history, you're doomed to repeat it. And it looks as though these people were sort of a caterpillar turned into a very ugly dragon-type butterfly, and they're now embedded in these colleges, the colleges that are now inculcating our youth with these Marxist ideals. And so we can see they're just spawning Antifa proteges, aren't they, Lou?
Yes, that's right. Very much. And we know that your listeners are not fooled. But just because the Trump administration has successfully spared America's sovereignty from two gigantic threats, the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Paris Climate Treaty, the Wrecking Crew, as time calls it, will shortly destroy the NWO and deep state, bring perfect populism into being. No, a key analysis by Pittsburgh Post-Gazette executive editor Ron Shribman, I think you pronounced
it. I think it's Shribman.
Shribman, okay. November 28th tells us we are right to be cynical, rights for the rich, but the middle class takes a hit. And again, this is by David Shribman. Are the Republicans producing a tax bill that represents dramatic reform, or are they taking populist language while serving the party's traditional corporate allies? For ages, the Republicans were the party of big business, even when their leaders had no roots in what we today describe as the wealthiest 1%. Senator Bob Dole, the quintessential Republican of the last age, was no plutocrat. His father ran a butter and egg station in Russell, Kansas. As a young county attorney, he had to sign his grandparents' welfare checks. The GOP's transformation began with the Newt Gingrich Revolution of 1994, when the party's focus began to change from big business to small business. That is why the credo core of Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin was so significant. The Republican is a Paul Ryan ally, but more important, he's a small businessman, having run his family's plastic manufacturing company before joining the Senate in 2011. Johnson's cause is the legislation's treatment of so-called pass-through businesses, which account for 90% of the country's businesses. These are taxed at the individual rate, not the corporate rate. As a result, the legislation would tax these operations at 32% rather than the 20% big companies must pay. Bottom line, the Johnson Rebellion is a test of whether the new GOP is the servant of its traditional corporate constituency or whether it is a more populist political force responsive to the interests of the majority of Americans in the private sector who work for small businesses. Will the Republicans, and this is a question, will the Republican rebels who talk about draining the swamp face down the rebellion from some of the biggest swamp dwellers in the Capitol? Among the alligators, tadpoles, and mosquito lobby in the Washington swamp sits the home real estate industry, which has enjoyed the deductibility of home interest for more than a century, and which continues to argue that the mortgage interest deduction is the rock upon which the American dream is built. For decades, its lobbyists have argued that removing this tax break would put home ownership beyond the means of millions, when in fact this provision disproportionately benefits the wealthy. Besides, according to Swiss Finance Institute study, the rate of home ownership in Canada, Britain, and Australia, where such interest is not deductible, exceeds that of the United States. Bottom line, if lawmakers bow to this giant special interest, they will signal that they are willing to talk the easy populist language, but are unwilling to walk the difficult populist trail. Another question. Trump and his Capitol Hill allies are at war with the way Washington works. But are they embracing one of the governing principles of the Capitol, which is that tax bills and budgets need not be honest, and that the calculations of the effective legislation in the out years, and that's in quotes, out years, can be as phony as the legislation's authors need it to be? For generations, lawmakers have supported legislation that they knew rested on fraudulent economic assumptions and accounting tricks. These contrivances have been favored by congressional leaders of both parties. The nonpartisan Joint Committee on Taxation already has warned that the bill the Senate will consider this week would actually raise taxes on families with incomes under $75,000, a conclusion that leading GOP figures contest. But it is incontrovertible that the legislation calls for the bulk of the tax cuts to expire in 2025. which is a wily dodge. It allows lawmakers to skirt a congressional rule prohibiting bills requiring only a Senate majority from adding to the deficit after the passage of a decade's time. Moreover, a study by the Nonpartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget found that the bill has a full $515 billion, with a B, dollars in gimmicks, and would add $2.2 trillion to the deficit. Bottom line, these maneuvers are the algae that are the very foodstuff for the swamp animals Trump and his allies are sworn to eliminate. The chances that the tax bill that goes to the president's desk before Christmas will be algae-free? Slim. That is a conclusion that both Republican rebels and Republican regulars would deplore, or should deplore, and one that Democratic lawmakers will take exception to, even though they practice the same deception games when they were in power. Viewed that way, there is little difference between Obamacare's claim that Americans could keep their doctors and Trump's claim that tax overhaul is a populist imperative. Once again, that's by David Sherman, who's the executive editor of the...
skepticism that we urge all of you to keep means that you are being wise as serpents and gentle as doves. That's what the Lord wants. He doesn't want you to be entrapped and harmed physically, spiritually, emotionally. And we often read articles from David Cloud, Friday Church News Notes, and many of his things are so important. I don't know whether we'll have time tonight to talk about what he wrote on December 1st about a praying church, the benefits of it, Spurgeon, his wonderful church, and about the evangelical megachurch withering after supporting gay marriage, and the Boy Scouts now admitting girls. You know, I might just give you a little bit of that. December 1st, and this is www.wayoflife.org. The following is excerpted from Girl Scouts Not Too Thrilled, Daily Wire, October 12th. 2017. On Wednesday, the Boy Scouts of America announced that they would be admitting girls in their ranks as a way to counter their declining membership. The new policy would go into effect starting next year and would admit older girls. Leaders of the Girl Scouts have not exactly welcomed the news with open arms. The Boy Scouts' house is on fire, they told ABC News. Instead of addressing systemic issues of continuing sexual assault, financial mismanagement, and deficient programming, BSA senior management wants to add an accelerant to the house fire by recruiting girls. The Boy Scouts admitting girls comes amidst a wave of political correctness that has severely infected the organization these past several years. It began first with the admittance of openly gay scout leaders that then yielded to the admittance of transgender individuals. The change-ups have caused a massive uproar among their primary source of membership, churches. In response to the political correctness, some churches have stopped doing business with the Boy Scouts entirely. Now, that's an exemplary article that is really straightforward. But you see, even someone like David Cloud can be a little naive. We can all be gullible in certain aspects so that we have to pray for discernment and we have to help each other when we see through something. The all-seeing eye is progressing. Remember Admiral Poindexter's office? He had the TIA, I think the Total Information Awareness. What a braggart that was, that title. But that has progressed through DARPA, Google, Facebook, the microphones in the Samsung TVs, the smart meters. So we're really getting there. Now, David Cloud on December 1st was really lauding China's futuristic library. I want you to hear the big puff he gave it. The newly opened Tianjin Binhai Library in China is designed to look like a giant eye. And Lou, if I were reading this to you in the living room, what would you do? Ding.
Oh, yes. A little ding, which means,
alert.
I see something
new
strange
order.
About that.
Yeah. The five-story library contains 1.2 million books, though multitudes of books won't be found there due to state censorship. The building was designed by the Dutch company MVRDV in collaboration with local architects. Such a library is an interesting investment in the age of e-books. In 2006, just before the Kindle reader first appeared, the annual sales of e-books was only about $20 million. In a mere decade, that has risen to $1 billion. Amazon's Kindle turns 10, The Guardian, November 13, 2017. The e-book has facilitated the age of the self-publishing. The number of self-published books rose from 80,000 in 2006 to 800,000 in 2016, and that doesn't include the large number of titles that are published without an ISBN. I do 75% of my reading on a large-screen iPhone using a Kindle app. The last time I visited the British Library and renewed my reader's card, I told the lady that these libraries are going to be museums soon. And here's a very sad note, Lou. This is going to really make you clutch your heart. One of the reasons why I sold my 6,000-volume library some years ago, which had many rare books in history, was that they can be found online because Google has scanned them. Do you feel like upchucking?
Yes, very much so.
You know, we don't have 6,000 books, but we cherish every hardback and paperback title we have. This is just unbelievable that he doesn't see through this, that this is the New World Order. This is the pre-tribulation era. This is what Ray Bradbury had in his novel Fahrenheit 451. The book burnings and the people who had memorized some of the books, they could survive a little while. But we think about this. And I remember the person in the library one time when I went in there and I said, did it ever occur to you that Kindle could be something like a little acronym, not an acronym, but a little allegorical representation to hide the fact that books could be burned? Oh, my goodness, she said. Oh, I never thought of that. Oh, that's just so clever. Well, it isn't clever. It's survival of the human spirit. And we can know that there's some kind of force here at work. Number one, China isn't permitting all of the books to be in there. There's state censorship. Number two, who was behind the Dutch company MVRDV in collaboration? Is that the Royal Dutch family? Is that the Bilderberg Association started by Prince Bernard? Who knows? But at any rate, we know that we have to remain awake, and we're seeing things that are deception. And I know we won't get to all of it tonight, so you will really want to tune in. We're going to have all new programs again. We know that some of you listeners do not like repeats. And there was something, one listener wrote to us, and he said something about you gave out the address for Carl Sanders, and he's dead. He's in heaven. His address is in heaven. And as it is, and I think that Carl would probably get a big chuckle out of that with his big Burl Ives laugh. And you know, Christmas is coming, and he said that he could never throw out all of Christmas, even though, of course, he wouldn't endorse the pagan roots and the pagan customs. But he said people are very soft at that time. You can reach them for the Lord. And he would tell Lou and me about meeting people in a bus stop or somewhere else. He would strike up a conversation because they were lonely. They were hurt. And that's the time when people feel familial dysfunction the most, because either they have no one to go home to, or there's a nightmare when they do go home. And believe me, I lived through years of that, didn't I, Lou?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
But you know, you saw that after my parents passed away, God reunited my whole family. He healed things. He made a wonderful, wonderful kind of Christian reunion. And members of my family, he has healed various aspects. So we are a Christian program, and we tell you out there that your life will never be meaningful till you turn to Jesus Christ, until you surrender your life to Him. You know, I'm just about ready to throw out all of my style magazines. I like fashion. You know, in a secular lifetime, I probably would have loved designing windows in Macy's in New York and things like this. I have an artistic bent. I had an ancestor who painted with Copley, you know, in the Revolutionary era around that time. So, you know, I really enjoy fashion. I enjoy color. I like designing things. But lately, the magazines are becoming more and more depraved and decadent. And the latest one came, and I turned over to Lou, and I said, look at this picture. They're showing some models in pastel colors that you would wear in the spring. And, you know, you would think of feminine dresses and maybe people with hair like Bernadette Peters, curly hair, blonde hair, and smiles and pretty makeup. These all had depraved, depressed, demonic glares, didn't they?
Yes, they reminded me of people that I've seen that were on drugs. They certainly didn't look like the kind of woman I would ever be attracted to.
No, and of course, the depraved quality of the fashions now, all of the evening gowns, and I'm not exaggerating, the neckline goes down to almost the navel. And again, we see real people. We don't see them wearing these things. Sooner or later, these magazines are going to go out of business if they don't change and appeal to the mainstream. I know I'm not going to renew this magazine when it comes up for renewal. I had to get rid of another fashion magazine. It was called Allure because even some of the readers wrote in, why are you always featuring naked people? I mean, that's a good question, in the commercials and everything. And that magazine actually did, I guess, go out of business. They quit publishing it. So they began to substitute sending me Glamour instead, which I wouldn't have subscribed to. But at least I did get to read about Planned Parenthood and the Woman of the Year, the head of Planned Parenthood. I got some information for this radio work. But, you know, there's so much more. Here's Amazon. It's going to be coming in with a deliveryman into your home. We have a lot to report, so you won't want to miss tuning in next week to The Divided Kingdom. And again, if you would like to write to us, if you can't contribute, just write us a letter of encouragement to Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Again, that's P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And we ask the Lord to bless you. Please pray for Captain Darrell Eberhardt. He is recovering from a stroke, and he's doing a little better. So please put him in your prayers for healing. Thank you so much. Good night.